Hi there. We have to shorten the songs on this podcast version of the show in order to keep it free to download. But we do listen through the songs together in real time during the taping. So if you want to hear the interview in its original format, just hop over to 3songstories.org or use the WGCU app on your phone to stream it.
One, two, three.
Welcome to Three Song Stories, the show where we use the songs from our guest pass as the ingredients to a biographical stew. I'm your host, Richard Cinque. My guest this episode is Sinelli Popowitz. If you ask Sinelli what his job is, he'll probably say he's a jeweler out of Naples, Florida. But if you ask him, what do you do, you'll find out he's a sound guy. A really good one, too. He's worked and lived all over the East Coast and has run sound from small venues to recording studios to mega churches. Rare is the person that can run a soundboard, craft a diamond bracelet, and build a chicken coop. But that's Sinelli. He hangs his hat here in Southwest Florida with his wife, three kids, two dogs, and assorted chickens and ducks, and I knew I wanted to have him on as soon as we started making this show.
Hey there, Sinelli.
Hey.
So I tracked along with your pictures while you were building that coop.
Oh, my goodness.
Really impressive. thank you so much for coming in. I'm really excited to do this with you.
So am I.
I think you're one of those people that when we first met, I was immediately like, oh, this guy and I are friends and we just have never hung out before.
Yes.
This.
So we were always friends.
Yeah. I mean, it was fast. Mm-hmm. So, all right. First things first, jeweler by day, sound guy by night. This is not common. Is there like a secret to sound mixing that you can only learn by being a jeweler that I don't know about? What's the common thread?
I don't know. I think it's precision. And it's probably also stems from my dad. He was such a perfectionist in making and repairing jewelry. And I'm a very easygoing guy. Mm-hmm. But his perfectionism was like the rule of the shop. So I think I got my knack for really fine-tuning things, working and learning under him, because that's kind of how I mix. You know, I'll get a general sense of what it's supposed to sound like, and then I'll start to define and carve out like, okay, this is supposed to be all vocals, so I'll really work on the vocals. They want a lot of guitar, I'll work on getting a great guitar sound. And that's kind of
translates okay.
I think that's where it's from. But
so you're speaking of your parents, mm-hmm. They were missionaries?
Yes.
And were they missionaries your whole life, like when you were growing up?
Yeah. I mean when they got married in 1969 on their honeymoon. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of had this moment, a spiritual moment where they were like, we feel called to minister to Ukrainian people, mm-hmm. Wherever that may be. And back then, there was the Iron Curtain. You know, the USSR was in power. And so you couldn't go and be a missionary in Ukraine or Russia or anywhere in the USSR. So, but my parents decided to just, travel around the States and travel around Canada. And their medium was Southern gospel music.
So you had Southern gospel music in the house growing up?
All the time. That was my upbringing.
Because they played and sang?
Yeah. What they would do is they would take these songs that were written in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And they were very, they were very sad songs because the people were very oppressed there. There's a specific type of minor timbre to the Ukrainians, already to the national sound. And on top of the oppression that a lot of the Christians were going through, they wrote songs in that type of style. My parents took a Southern gospel twist to it and kind of made like a quartet type of sound. So that's the music I grew up listening to.
Okay. Is that the earliest musical memory that you have?
Yeah. I mean, probably from the womb, mm-hmm. How they do the thing where, you're pregnant and you put on headphones.
Yeah. Did you guys do that? Did you and your wife do that?
Yeah, me and my wife definitely did that.
What music did you play for your kids?
Oh my gosh. I think I started playing like, like Brahms and Beethoven. Yeah. And then I was like, no, come on, let's, you know, let's put on some fun music. So put on some EDM so get the baby bouncing in there.
Before the show, you and I were talking about Daft Punk before the show.
Yes.
And I have to admit that, yeah, we actually played a lot of Daft Punk against my wife's belly. So did you take part in that music too? Like, did you learn to perform as well?
Well, yes and no. You know, I was always there,
mm-hmm.
right? So as I grew up, you know, no matter where my parents went, they always took me. So I remember either sitting on a pew, right in front of my parents while they were singing, sitting next to the piano. I remember knowing all the harmonies. I could tell my mom, hey, mom, this is how this guy would sing, or this is how you sing. And I would sing the parts exactly because I would hear it so much. And
so you had an ear for it at really young.
Very young, yeah. And when I was around 5 years old, I started singing with my parents. My mom saw that I could sing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started singing. My dad started teaching me to play guitar. I started to dabble on piano. I taught myself how to play drums. So music and musical instruments were always a part of my life. Always.
Do you still play for fun?
Yeah.
Any of those things?
Yeah. I was kind of dumb in my teen years. I didn't pursue piano like I should have. But I can play a little bit of keyboards. I can play the drums. I know like 4 chords on the guitar, and I'll make it seem like I know more.
Okay. And, do you remember any of those Eastern European hymns?
Yeah, I do. I mean, they're in my brain.
Do you think you could?
Dude, I think I could what?
Sing a little bit of one of them?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. Like accurately, probably not.
Do you think maybe straight to the chorus of one? Like a melody?
You're not going to let this go.
if I can get it, if I can get it from you.
Oh, man. There was one song. I may screw up the words, but you're not going to understand.
I won't know.
But it would go something like this. Молю тебе, я в тишині, почуй мене тепер, я твій, з гріхом і злом, боюся я, і знемогла душа моя.
Mm-hmm. That's very good.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So there's a lot of minor, major.
That's beautiful.
it is
that
beautiful.
Created a... I have no idea what you sang, and the yearning, it's real, right?
Yes, yeah. And I mean, I sang it fast and sure. Sloppy, but it was a very slow song.
Was that the same music in the house, or did your parents also have like music that they like to listen to?
Yeah, it was pretty much the same. You know, a lot of the songs that we would sing, you know, they were, of course, like I said, Southern Gospel.
Mm-hmm.
They would listen to all the newest, latest Southern Gospel greats. And so it was always in the house. You know, there was some, we listened to a lot of Family Life Radio,
mm-hmm.
And whatever was playing, you know, back in the 80s. So that was all I ever heard. It was perpetual.
And then as you got older, mm-hmm. you started to discover your own music?
Yes. Also being in a, you know, being a missionary kid, I was very sheltered.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was taught that the music of the world was just evil and corrupt. I listened to tapes about backmasking and subliminal messages.
Right.
So I was actually afraid of rock music. I remember going into the record store and seeing like covers of Twisted Sister, yeah. and just like, just this is so demonic,
yeah.
and horror. I mean, it's just horrific. And
it had
so,
confirmed all the things
you
had been told.
But that leads into my first song.
Okay, so what's your first song?
So my first song is Living on a Prayer by John Bon Jovi.
All right. I want to go straight to it.
Okay.
Let's hear it, and then I want to talk about that.
All right.
So this is Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
That's a great song.
It is a great song.
All right, so here you are. How old about would you say?
I think I was about 7 or 8 years old.
Okay, and generally scared of secular music.
Mm-hmm. Very evil.
What could, you know, potentially affect you, change you spiritually, mm-hmm. and how do you come upon this song?
All right, so we were staying at my uncle's house in New Jersey, and my cousins, it was Jen Lusick and Sam. They called me into their room, and they were like, "Listen to this song." And I listened, and I was like, I remember thinking like, "Well, this is a rock song. This is bad," but he's singing about like praying and struggling, and man, this sounds good. This is really good.
There's a lot more going on.
Wait a second. Yeah. My whole worldview, like I can even pinpoint to that moment, like that moment where you start to realize like, oh, parents don't know everything. You know,
yeah, that's early to figure that out.
I really have to say because after that, I started sneaking, like listening to the radio on headphones whenever I got a chance, because I had to hear more.
Yeah,
you know, that's how I started listening to different like rock stations. I remember listening to the Bangles, walking like an Egyptian.
I'm sure your parents were terrified you would hear. Oh, they walk like an Egyptian.
They knew. I don't think they ever found out. But I just remember that moment. Like it was definitive when I was making this list. Like I was like, yeah, this was the song that really kind of opened up my, you know, my mind to thinking differently. You know, there's a whole world of music out there. I was still sheltered. I didn't get to listen to a lot of stuff, but you know,
did you? At that age, have an inkling that you might want to do something with music for a career, or was it too early for that?
Yeah, it was too early.
Right. So I have to say that there are certain songs that I think are like cheating songs when you're going to do karaoke because you never really have to sing them by yourself.
Yeah.
TNT by mm-hmm. AC/DC, mm-hmm. Don't Stop Believin' by Journey, you know. I think Living on Prayer is one of those,
oh, yeah.
right? As long as there's people in the bar, they'll help. So yeah. you're never really that oh, embarrassed. Yeah. Do you ever do karaoke?
You know, I've never done karaoke. Isn't that sad?
maybe we'll go out and do karaoke.
I think we need to do karaoke.
what about by yourself then? Like when, you know, in the car?
Oh,
or
yeah.
home,
absolutely.
Belting out. I mean, you've got a great voice.
Oh, absolutely. I harmonize like nobody.
What's your go-to song?
My go-to song?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, because I'm so involved in church worship mm-hmm. and stuff, it's mostly a lot of worship songs that we're going to be playing or singing that weekend. And I do listen to a lot of worship during my meditation.
Sure.
So yeah, I'll harmonize and stuff. But I really don't have a go-to song in particular, I don't think. But like when songs like these come up, oh yeah.
Irresistible to
– Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. So here you are discovering this world of music. You're listening. Mm-hmm. You're sneaking. I mean, every new song, every different genre probably is unpacking new worlds.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first piece of music that you owned for yourself? Like, what was the first thing you had in this arena?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. See, I was thinking about this one. I've got to say, you know, there was a lot of Christian albums that I would buy here and there. But the first like real piece of music that I bought was a U2 CD.
Which one?
I think it was Joshua Tree. I think it was like the reissued gold master. Mm. It was like a special one. You'd open the CD case, you would open it and it would kind of like lift up the CD, and the CD was all gold. Because I heard so many of my, you know, of my at that point I was like 16, 17 years old. I know that's a huge jump, but I heard so many people talk about U2 in interviews, like, oh, we're inspired, we love U2 and blah blah blah. And I would be like, I never listened to U2. I have to listen to this band. And that was like the first secular music, believe it or not, that I bought. I bought lots of rock CDs, but they were all like Christian stuff.
Right.
But this was the first CD that when I bought it, man, it was, I played that thing till it wouldn't play anymore.
Did it help that Joshua Tree has plenty of Christian references? You could make the language in those songs.
Yeah, sort of.
Did your parents hear that CD, or was that still?
I don't think they heard it. I would show my parents some music here and there. But they would just wave me away.
Sure. You're a teenager.
You're a teenager.
Doing a thing. Okay. You know. What's the last physical album you remember, like going out and buying? Like you got to go to the store, buy it.
Oh, my gosh. That's a good question.
Thanks.
Holy moly. Man, when did iTunes like drop? Was that like 2001, 2002? No, that's 2007.
The iPhone in 07.
Oh, the iPhone's in 07. So I remember I got my iPod in 03, mm-hmm. I think. Man, what else? What came out? Well, I can't remember.
Are you implying that you haven't bought physical music ever since an iPod?
Yeah, pretty much. After the iPod, that was it. Like I don't have any more CDs or anything. The last one that I remember was when I was visiting my cousin in Argentina. I bought, what's that rap album? The Three White Boys.
Oh, Beastie Boys.
The Beastie Boys. The one where they're in the sardine can.
Yeah.
Okay. What was that called?
We'll have to look it up.
We're stupid. Yeah. It was that album.
Mike's going to look it up and tell us.
Yeah, it was that album. Okay. Was the last one that I actually
Was it remember. New then when you were in Argentina?
Yeah, it just I think it just came out.
So the album was Hello Nasty.
Hello Nasty.
Right.
Of course.
Thank you, Mike.
Sorry.
Were
Intergalactic was like on the radio every day.
Oh, right. It was. Yeah. Did you hop kind of right onto that digital music, I don't want to say bandwagon, but like, you know, the train was leaving the station. People were filling up these new, little wallet-sized devices mm-hmm. with, you know, a couple of gigs of music. And you could suddenly buy songs a la carte.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Right away. Like the minute I got my iPod, I went on and I registered it. I went on my laptop and downloaded iTunes, and I was like, wow, this is really cool, And I took all the CDs that I had and transferred them onto my laptop. And those CDs are still in the garage like 20 years later.
You could go get the CDs if you had to.
I could. Right. I actually still have a pile of CDs. But yeah.
So speaking of, a lot's been made of comparing various kinds of media, you know, the vinyl revival, mm-hmm. People who only listen to like 320-bit audio or even like FLAC, like they don't do mm-hmm. compression. What's your take on all of that as a sound engineer?
Well, I mean, it is nice to sit down, put on, you know, a really good record and listen to through some really nice headphones, through a really nice preamp. Absolutely. Like, and if I didn't have three kids and chickens and dogs and a wife and a house and all kinds of other responsibility, I would have all of that. And you'd probably be over at my house like every day.
Yeah, that sounds great.
But, for me, it really isn't that big of an issue. I really enjoy music. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that, maybe it's compressed a little bit and there's some ones and zeros missing, that doesn't stop me from listening. I really don't care.
Do you have a preference that you look for, or just like whichever one's the fastest to hear?
I mean, I want to listen to what's the latest thing. I love to listen, you know, every Friday I'm like on my phone listening to all the new music that's dropping. Listen to All Songs Considered like a crazy person.
Public radio guy.
Yes. So I'm always, you know, looking for something new. I love it. So yeah, it's most of what I listen to is compressed streaming.
Sure.
You know, but every once in a while, like if there's a really good album, I'll download it. I'll buy it on the store and get, you know, a much higher quality and listen to him on my really nice headphones.
What are your really nice headphones?
Right now, I really love the Barodynamic DT770s.
Okay. So people write that down?
Yes. They have a nice velvet ear cushion. So nice.
Okay. So you mentioned Fridays, you're listening for new music. Mm-hmm. Where and when do you do your listening in general?
At work. So as a bench jeweler, mm-hmm. You know, I'm seated in my bench all day. Nobody's there talking to me, disturbing me. So I have my little Bluetooth speaker. I have Bluetooth headphones. So I will listen throughout the day. I'll watch movies. I'll listen to podcasts, and I'll listen to music. And so that's where I primarily listen to my music. On the weekends at home, you know, I'll hook up my entertainment system and blast some music with the kids, but then they take over,
sure,
and start playing their stuff.
So it sounds like on a regular day, it's a pretty big part of your day.
Oh yeah, all day. And I'll get on, you know, I'll get on like just like today. I'm listening to 80s. I'm just listening to 80s.
Oh, and I do that,
and I'll do that for two or three days sometimes. You know, or oh my gosh, somebody talked about this jazz record. I'll start listening to that jazz record and just start listening. Oh, okay. Well, let's listen to this one and that one. And
do you ever get stuck listening to different covers of the same song, for like an hour worth of just nine people playing the same?
Yes, I have done that on a number of occasions.
Can you think of one that you love to hear different versions of?
The latest one was Weezer's cover of Toto.
Okay,
holy cow.
We're gonna stop and talk about this for a second. Opinion incoming. I think that their cover is spectacular because they don't mess with it.
Exactly.
And there's a lot.
Exactly.
A lot's been made of the fact that they didn't like do like a Weezer-y version of it. But man, sometimes it's just really fun to hear good musicians play a song the way that it sounds.
Absolutely. Even the keyboard part. Yeah. Like I heard that Weezer did that, I was like, oh brother, you know, here we go. But then I listened to it, and I was like, it was so well done.
Yeah.
Like you could tell that those guys really respect Toto. Yeah.
If you're listening to this and you like Africa, which, mm-hmm. okay, so if you have a heartbeat and you're listening to this and you even have a glancing understanding of who Weezer is, just go Google Weezer, yes. Africa, and listen to it. And then don't read all of the people who criticize it, because they're haters, yeah. I guess.
They have no idea what they're talking about.
All right, so... all right, let's move on to your second song.
Yes.
What did you bring for your second song?
So for my second song, it's a song by Jeff Buckley. And how I got into Jeff Buckley was when I went to Nashville to intern at a recording studio. And the second engineer that I was interning for, he would put him on. And we had some really nice Atom speakers. These things were like, I think, $3,000 each. Beautiful monitors. I mean, amazing. And we would play it through an SSL console. You know, so you had like the purest tone. And he was like, "Hey, listen, you ever heard of Jeff Buckley?" I was like, "No." So he put on Hallelujah. Of course, that's the
standard.
Wow. And so I went. I remember going to the store that day and buying the record, and listening to it, and just falling in love with such an incredible emotional album. Like I was moved listening to him, you know. And this song in particular, "Lover, You Should Have You Should Come Over."
You should have come over.
Yeah, "Lover, You Should Have Come Over." I don't know. I would go back to that song over and over, and you could hear the longing in his voice. Mm. Like you really could. That song changed how I perceived how you could really emotionally connect with an audience. I thought I've never felt a connection like that.
Sure. Was that after he had passed away?
Yeah, that was already. This was in 2003.
So
I forgot when he passed away.
So really thinking about that, you know, here's a song recorded by someone not even alive anymore, mm-hmm. and you feel this connection emotionally through the recording.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, you hear songs all the time, right? And every once in a while, it'll be like, oh, maybe I'm feeling depressed or whatever. So I'll be sad if I hear a sad song. But this wasn't the mood I was in. I was just listening to a record, and I remember listening to that song and just thinking like, whoa, what's up with this guy? Mm-hmm. You know, what was he going through? The way he sang that song, the way he performed that song, you know, the use of gospel I don't know. There's words just cannot describe. I cannot describe this song enough.
Well, luckily you don't have to. We're going to listen.
Yes.
So, all right. This is Lover, You Should Have Come Over by Jeff Buckley.
Too young to hold on, and too old to just break free and run. It's now.
I can see how, you know, in Tennessee, in a Nashville recording studio, mm-hmm. if you'd never heard that song before, that would blow the back of your head open. Like, so everyone knows, you know, Jeff Buckley's rendition of Hallelujah. He mentioned it earlier. That's become like the standard for the song now. Aside from that song and this one, as someone who's really into him, what are go-to songs that you would tell people if they've never heard Jeff Buckley? Like if you wanted to hook them, if you were like, here's a song, aside from those two, because
Lilac Wine is really good. So is, I think it's called Mojo Pin, the first one. I mean, just take the album and listen to it start to finish. Sure. I mean, every song on there is really, really good. And what's really beautiful is like he mixes so many different elements.
There's a lot going on in that song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like this, you feel gospel. Mm. There's a little bit of rock, a little bit of blues.
I heard one of those, I think, like a B3 sounding, like one of those old organs in mm-hmm. the background.
Yeah, it's
okay, so there you are. How old when you went off to
Well, I was
Nashville?
About 20, like 22, 23. We just got married. Mm-hmm. And fresh out of school, and here I am in Nashville. Interning at a major recording studio, and I went there because I really wanted to pursue my dream of becoming like a big time record producer, recording engineer extraordinaire. Mm-hmm. You know, best the world's ever seen.
I'm sure like a taste of that could definitely solidify that kind of drive to like I want to make that.
Oh yeah, and I heard so many different great albums. That's where my musical education really took off, because when I went to school, you know, I was among a lot of my peers, and so I learned about a bevy of artists, and that just accelerated when I was there, because you know a lot of times in the studio you don't really have much to do, so you know you'll just put something on in the studio. My routine was I'd come in, clean the whole thing, vacuum, mop the live room, make sure everything, all the snacks are put out and stuff. And then Cartage would come in with instruments and people's gear, and we would set up the live room, and there would always be music playing. So sometimes I bring some of my favorites, but a lot of times engineers or the seconds would come in with their music, and so I learned a lot. It was a lot of country, to be honest.
Do you listen to any country?
No, I quickly found out that I am a very much like anti-Nashville country. The sound, the technicality of it's great. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to deny that. But the whole like industry, I got a real taste of it. But what I really enjoy is kind of like that outlaw country, like anything a little bit older, like a little bit more raw, a little bit more real, has really, really kind of like that. That's the only country I'll listen to.
Are we talking like Johnny Cash?
Yeah, Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson. Yeah. I forgot the lady's name.
Dolly Parton?
No. Dolly's awesome. the one that did the project with Jack Black. Not Jack Black, the other guy.
Oh, Jack White?
With Jack White. That's so funny. with Jack White. I forgot her name. You know,
Mike, we need your help.
I should have written down.
Oh, that's okay. This isn't live. Mike can look it up.
It's like with an L or something.
Okay. Mike tells me that you were looking for Loretta Lynn.
Loretta Lynn, yes, Loretta Lynn.
Yeah.
Almost any of her albums, and especially the one that Jack White helped produce. That's country right there.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right. That'll get me going.
I gotta say that we do a long version and a short version of the podcast. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening to the short one right now, and so you heard a truncated version of that Jeff Buckley song, do yourself a favor at the end of this show and go look for "Lover, You Should Have Come Over." The middle of that song has some real stuff happening that you don't want to miss if you've never heard it. What bands or songs are you trying to hook people on nowadays? Like, what do you proselytize the most?
Well, I mean, I'm really into anything new. Mm-hmm. But lately I've really been enamored with this new band called The Night Game. Have you heard of it?
I have not. The Night Game. Compare them to somebody.
I don't know who I could compare them to. I mean, it's a very like 80s sounding band. But
that's come popular again.
But it's every 80s band doing every 80s big moments in one song. Seriously. Like from the reverb, from the stops, from the bridges.
Key change?
The key changes. the kind of like that new wave sound.
Yeah, they know what people want.
It's good.
Right. What's the name again? One more time.
The Night Game.
The Night Game.
Yes. Okay. It's really good. Their album is about to be released. They have a bunch of singles out.
Okay. Any chance to see them live?
Oh, man, I totally missed out. I've missed out on a lot of shows because of, family stuff.
Yeah.
So I think they opened for somebody in Tampa. I forgot who they opened for. I know they opened for a band not too long ago.
If they came through Florida again, would you try to make it a point to go see?
Absolutely. Okay. I've kicked myself for not going.
What's the last live show that you did manage to go to?
I went to see Sufjan Stevens last tour, and was just, wow, blown away. That was a good show.
being a sound guy, right, I can commiserate here. For me, it can be really hard to not analyze the sound at a live show.
Yes.
You're doing your job. Mm-hmm. You'd want to think about how you could fix it. I can't be alone, right?
No, it's totally true. Especially when you go and something starts to go wrong. Like that's what triggers me. I kind of go in kind of like, hey, enjoy this. This is not, you're not at work. Mm-hmm. You're not mixing this. Just enjoy. And I understand like you have to adjust. You can't just criticize, oh, this sounds like garbage. Well, of course it sounds like garbage. You don't listen to music in Germain Arena every day.
Right.
So you have to sit there for two or three songs and kind of, you know, your ears will get adjusted and you'll get into it. But if things continue to go wrong, then I just, you know, the concert sucks.
The professionalism, right?
Yeah, it just it's bad.
So is it easy for you, that first part of it? Like if nothing goes wrong, is it easy for you to kind of just put aside that guy? Okay.
Oh yeah, I'm very much into being entertained.
Mm.
And once it goes great. Like I'm in. I'm invested. I'm your fan now. I'm your super fan. I'm there screaming.
And I suppose, to be fair, if you wanted it to just sound normal the way it sounds all the time, you would just stay home and listen.
Exactly.
So it's about the stage.
Yes. Right. Oh yeah.
You ever been to a concert and been just completely blown away by the sound team? Like you just kind of in our.
Yeah. That Sufjan show was incredible, especially because how soft he sings. And I did not know this. Like he would sing like it looked like 10 feet away from the microphone and he's whispering. Wow. And they still got that boxy sound. That was very impressive. His mic of choice was a 57, an SM57.
Of course it was.
Of course.
For the listeners who are not on audio gear, that is a cheap, bog standard instrument mic that you can buy at the local like guitar center or whatever.
It's
like,
$80.
It's everywhere, yeah.
Every president ever speaks into an SM57.
That's true.
Yeah, and there he was like with his guitar, like I'd say a good 3 feet away. And it was like CD quality.
Mm.
And, you know, that boxed in effect
that
would, of course, like for me, I'm like, how is there not any feedback? I was very impressed. Another great show sounded amazing. I went to see Aerosmith in Nashville.
Hey.
At an amphitheater. And we were all the way on the grounds. So, you know, you have that big amphitheater sound, mm-hmm. echoey, but it sounded great. And then towards the middle of the show, they come all the way to the center.
Like a catwalk?
Yeah, no, not a catwalk, like all the way back.
Oh.
And they had a small stage and they played all of their greatest hits, like where you know, the grassy area was. So we all rushed the stage and it was just small little speakers. It sounded like a club.
Hmm.
And I heard, you know,
club with Aerosmith on this.
Yeah, it was Aerosmith on this tiny stage. The stage was not bigger than this room.
Wow.
And cool. it sounded so good. I really remember that show.
And you were entertained.
Oh yeah. Thoroughly.
Okay. What is the third song?
So the third song is kind of like my technical song.
Mm.
So I got into Radiohead pretty early. But then when they released Kid A and I played the first track, I was floored, mostly because, you know, you listen to bands and they kind of have the same sound. I was actually talking to somebody about this, you know, the band, like Weezer. If mm-hmm. you listen to Weezer, you will know, like, whether it's their first album or their Toto cover.
Yeah.
They have the Weezer sound.
Yeah.
With Radiohead, not quite. You know, it always sounds different. They're a rock band, but they don't necessarily play rock music.
Fair.
You know, it's a very eclectic sound. And when I first heard this song, like, it made me realize, like, how you can really, you can be an artist, but you can take all of the wizardry and use it not just to, you know, to correct something or to add an effect, but you can actually use all of this technical stuff in the studio to create art, to create a sound.
Right. I want to hear more about that process when we hear the song. I want to have it bouncing around my head for that. So Radiohead, Everything in Its Right Place. Let's hear it. Everything. So it's like that song brushes up right against the line of EDM, or not, maybe not EDM, but like of electric music, electronica, because mm-hmm. they're taking real elements. It's not generated by a computer, but mm-hmm. but the mixing and the cutting on that is, they're making a different sound out yeah. of what they had out of the box.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, imagine these are the guys these are the guys that, you know, a bunch of their songs are on like Guitar Hero.
Yeah.
And then this comes out.
So what where were you when you heard that?
I was I think I was also in Nashville mm-hmm. towards the end of our stay there. And I remember listening to it, and then there's also another song called National Anthem on there too. Mm-hmm. Incredible. It was kind of between those two, because that whole album was just so cool, you know. And I remember listening to it on my headphones. I remember listening to it at the studio. Mm-hmm. I remember me and the second engineer trying to reproduce that flange effect.
Right.
To no avail.
That's the stuff I'm thinking yeah. about here. Like, you know, it's one thing to like compare it to the Buckley song. It's one thing to have, you know, perfectly orchestrated many, many elements that are all layered beautifully like a sandwich. Mm-hmm. And then there's this, yeah. which is like taking all the elements of a sandwich and making a delicious smoothie.
Yeah.
Like they, you know, it's something that shouldn't be.
That's a weird way to
but
say
it's like,
it. But yeah.
it's like still tasty somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. And it's like, you know, I really appreciate artists who do that too. You know, artists who will take whatever they're given and they just produce, you know, whatever it is they want to make. I think a lot of the newer artists that I really like are like that. You know, mm-hmm. they kind of, it used to be known as you're recording in your bedroom. People have kind of upgraded to creating spaces in their houses to be more like a studio, but still you're using elements around your house. You're using boxes. You're using a weird tub
reverb,
and you're processing it with all kinds of stuff that you download off the internet. I can really appreciate that a lot, because it's fun. It's fun.
Well, yeah. And a little music history. I mean, the first reverb tools were like bouncing sound off mm-hmm. plate. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was literally just...
Or like a room made out of rocks.
Yeah. Those are... I love internet videos where people sing like old hymns or like songs like what you sang earlier, but they'll do it inside of like an old subway, or they'll do it inside of like a steel container, like an oil container or whatever.
Can I share something real quick
yeah,
with you?
Yeah.
That we were in Poland sometime in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And we were spending about 3 or 4 days there before we were going to cross the border to Ukraine. And so we just went sightseeing, and we went to this Catholic church, and they had one of those crazy towers that you have to like, you know, climb a spiral staircase. That's like 200 steps. Mm-hmm. So we did that, you know, and we were walking back down, and while we were walking down, we heard this choir singing in the main chapel. It's not a chapel. It was huge. It was a huge church. The echo coming into the stairway was so incredible. And as we would descend, like it would get louder and yeah. more full. And I remember exiting that staircase into the main church, and I was surprised. There were only 10 people singing. But it sounded like 100 right. people with that reverb. It was unbelievable. They were practicing. We sat there for like 30 minutes, and they kept on singing. Yeah. We heard our interpreter told us that the guy was saying, "Okay, well, we got to wrap up." And the choir was like, "No, we want to sing one more song."
You guys,
because it sounded
in no
so
hurry to
beautiful.
Leave. Yeah. Oh. There's something great about that.
Holy moly.
Is there a song that almost made the cut?
That almost made the cut,
like,
yes.
What was your fourth, you know?
My fourth song that I had to kill. There was a band that I still love. And every time I hear it, it's just It's so nice. Maybe you know Sixpence None the Richer.
I do know Sixpence None the Richer.
I mean, they, you know, they went really big with the whole Kiss Me.
Yeah.
But I started listening to them when they just released this album called This Beautiful Mess.
I have that album.
You do?
Yeah.
So my favorite song is Love, Fear, and the Love, Salvation, and the Fear of Death. I would listen to that song so many times. I was in love with Lee Nash. Lee Nash, if you're listening, you broke my heart when you got married that PFR guy.
She had a really, really pretty voice.
She did. Yeah. I loved that band. I saw them live a few times when I was young, and they would always be.
Yeah.
They were way better than.
And they dominated the 90s with 90s sitcoms and 90s yes. movies. They
oh
were
my gosh.
In everything. Okay. is there a song that you avoid if you hear it? You reach over for that dial and just kind of nope.
I don't know. No, not really. Maybe like a silly song like Who Let the Dogs Out or something.
Okay.
Like one of those viral songs or whatever. But no, not really. I'm a nice guy. I'll listen.
Is there a song that you love that does like literally nothing for your wife, Ina? Like is there something like you look at her and you're like, yeah, and then she's no, it doesn't.
A lot of songs.
Well, name one.
Probably like this Radiohead song. Like I'll play it and mm-hmm. she'll be like, what is this? She's very much, you know, bubblegum pop.
Sure.
I'm like the dark shadow.
It's a Radiohead song, right?
Yeah.
What's a band or artist you most recently discovered? I guess it would be the...
Oh, no. The most recent one that I had discovered was just last week. Serpent with Feet.
Okay.
As an R&B artist, he was featured, I think, on one of the NPR shows.
Okay.
I just heard the tail end of it, and I went and loaded it up on Apple Music, and my goodness... Incredible. He's categorized as R&B, but it is not R&B.
Is it just something else or is it something?
It is like music for 20 years from now. It is so out of its time. It's a trip.
Okay.
It's a hard listen.
Say the name one more time.
Serpent with Feet.
Serpent with Feet.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a long way from listening to Southern Gospel to listening to Serpent with Feet.
You've had a long way to go.
Right?
All right. If you could mix a live concert
mm-hmm.
for any band, group, artist, living or dead,
oh man,
who would you put on that stage?
Oh man, that's a good one. This is not a joke. I would love to mix Kirk Franklin.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's something about gospel music I was born in it.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Southern gospel, but just straight gospel. That just anytime I hear a good choir song or something with a lot of gospel elements, I'm
yeah. And everything's turned way up.
You
like
turn it up. You get that bass organs. Shaking your molars. Yeah. Yeah. You know?
Spoken like a true sound guy.
Oh my goodness. That would be a dream. That would be, and especially Kirk Franklin. I mean, some of his songs are.
Which song would you need him to? You'd be like, you got to make sure you do this one while you're up there.
Oh, there's a new one. Definitely has to be "My World Needs You." It's an epic song. It starts off very slow, and it just doesn't stop. You know,
yeah.
It just builds and builds until finally, I think the last 30 seconds, you actually get a moment of release where you're like, oh, okay, we get it. My world really needs you okay. right now.
All right.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful song.
Cool. Any final thoughts?
No, I mean, you know, love music, you know. I really dislike when people start trashing music and like, oh, this guy sucks, that band sucks, this isn't real music, listen to this, you know. I get that you're a fanboy or a fangirl or whatever, but, you know, music is just a repeat of itself over and over and over again. So many of these new artists, they're paying homage to stuff that they listened to as they were kids and as they were teens. It's just how they're interpreting it in the present culture, you know. So I would just say, come on, you know, like, appreciate the music for what it is. You can play favorites, but don't hate, please.
You can play favorites, but don't hate. I love that. Thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Thank you.
I had a blast. This is really good.
So did I.
We make Three Song Stories in the studios of WGCU Public Radio on the campus of Florida Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers, Florida. The show is produced, directed, and co-created by Mike Kinnairy. Tara Callaghan is our social media content producer. Chris Duffus is our executive producer, and our theme music was created by Dave Cowan and Stick Martin at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. If you've got a parting tune and story that you'd like to hear on the show, send us an email with the song and the story. We're at mysongstory@wgcu.org. This week, my parting tune comes from a song that I first heard as a freshman in college. I had been playing piano and guitar for years at that point, but the songs that I liked to play and the songs my parents listened to didn't often overlap much. As I was going off to school, my dad pulled out a newly purchased CD, shrink wrap and all, and he gave it to me with the explanation that he thought that I would really enjoy the guitar work on it. That album was Eric Clapton's Unplugged album, and it was the first time I think my dad and I rode the same musical wavelength. He was right, of course. I loved the whole thing. And after hearing this song just once, I spent months in my dorm room learning to play it myself. This is Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton off of his Unplugged album. Keep listening.
Next time on Three Song Stories!
So I was in the middle of a suburb where my biggest problem was really boredom. What was the question again?
Why'd you run away from home?
Oh, because of boredom.